This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. As climate change and the environment gradually make their way up the priorities list in America, there's a power shift going on in Washington.
A plan 2 years in the making, and the single most important step America has ever taken in the fight against global climate change.
That's President Obama outlining his plan to reduce emissions and reliance on carbon energy over the next 15 years. The plan will rely less on Congress and more on federal regulatory authority to enact the president's so-called Clean Power Plan. This means that the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, is going to become a much more powerful agency over the next decade. Think FBI or FDA. A more powerful EPA is something conservatives have railed against for years. And now both parties will have to look at this as the Clean Power Plan finds itself right in the middle of the early campaigning for the 2016 election. Republican Governor Jeb Bush called the plan, quote, irresponsible and overreaching. Senator Marco Rubio warned consumers that the plan would dramatically increase electricity costs for millions of Americans. Last night at the New Hampshire Republican Presidential Candidates Forum, Scott Walker said this.
Well, first off, it's not the clean power plan. It's the costly power plan. It would be like a buzzsaw to the nation's economy. The states like mine and many of the other governors here would be devastated by that.
But the EPA will have a lot to answer for as this debate heats up, and from both sides of the aisle. Can it enforce existing environmental laws? Will states abide by emissions targets and energy goals? And what about the EPA's charge to see to it that environmental laws are enforced fairly, to correct cases of discrimination against minorities who bear the brunt of industrial pollution's effects in many places? The EPA Office of Civil Rights is charged with investigating all of that, and it can withhold funds from states and localities that are found liable. But a new investigation from the Center for Public Integrity finds that the agency's Office of Civil Rights rarely takes action under its Title VI authority, despite hundreds of complaints from across the country. Kristen Lombardi, senior reporter for the Center for Public Integrity, has found that the office has treated hundreds of cases with a disturbing lack of urgency, so much so that some plaintiffs have just given up on it.
The Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964. So EPA was created in 1970, and soon after that, it did implement Title VI regulations. But it didn't accept or process complaints until 1993, and that's when the modern sort of Office of Civil Rights, as we know it, processing and adjudicating civil rights claims, sort of came into being. So there were 20 years of regulations, but the first complaint alleging environmental discrimination wasn't accepted by EPA until 1993.
And what form does this discrimination take in the sense that remedies are being improperly applied or unequally applied to certain groups versus other groups, or that facilities are being created with this inequality in mind?
For the majority of complaints that we saw, we examined 15 years worth of complaints and the agency's response to those complaints. The majority dealt with permitting decisions. They were citing, you know, this location is discriminatory or will have a discriminatory effect. And sometimes it was pollution limits, you know, we're receiving the bulk of the pollution as well.
Based on your investigation, is the EPA a good place to take a complaint if you have, as a protected community, a claim of civil rights discrimination?
Not at all. Like I said, we looked at 15 years worth of complaints in the agency's response, and it's pretty much a pattern of denial, delay, and dismissal. 9 out of 10 times, communities, their claims are rejected outright without investigation, or they're dismissed upon investigation. There was only one time that the agency found a preliminary finding of a Title VI violation, meaning that the decision that they were investigating did have a discriminatory effect, but it was never formalized because there was a negotiated settlement that came out of that case. So, you know, we talked to dozens of advocates and residents and lawyers who handle these cases, and they say, first of all, it's an underutilized legal tool that the agency has to actually combat environmental injustice. But it's almost laughable, the record, you know. And so we don't even advise our communities to take this path. And a lot of communities feel like, you know, they're the typical environmental justice community, but they have little recourse if they choose to go the Title VI route.
What could possibly be the rationale for over 15 years having virtually no claim come to any fruition on behalf of a citizen complainant?
Well, that's, you know, that's the really interesting question. And we actually interviewed quite a few former and current EPA officials, either who worked in the office and were actually investigating these complaints, or they worked closely with the office. And everybody says the same thing. The agency, over the years, just doesn't know how to handle these cases. They don't know what environmental discrimination looks like.
What communities do you recall in your investigation that are particularly egregious or mystifying?
Well, the story that we came out with looks at a neighborhood in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, called University Place Subdivision. It's predominantly African-American, a neighborhood of pretty much single-family residences, some apartment buildings. And since 1960, there has been a city sewage plant right next to that neighborhood. When it first began operating, it was barely visible to neighborhoods. But over the decades, it's been expanded and sort of transformed into an industrial complex. And there's nothing but a two-lane street separating the sewage plant from the neighborhood. Since 2009, the neighborhood residents in the neighborhood have filed 5 complaints with the EPA's Office of Civil Rights, saying the city has violated our civil rights by not just citing the plant there, but operating it in such a way that we are victim to invasions of sewer flies, which are well documented in state records, bad odors, I mean human waste odors, and water pollutions, incessant water pollutions. This particular plant was a chronic violator of the Clean Water Act. And so it's not just that the city cited this plant here, but it's been operating this plant in a way in which we're experiencing the adverse effects. And we thought, wow, this is a pretty strong case, and at least the EPA should investigate. But 4 of those 5 complaints were dismissed outright for technical reasons, really, on procedural grounds, some of which the EPA could waive if it wanted to.
And has anything been done?
Well, I mean, residents call the Office of Civil Rights the do-nothing office. You know, they're very adamant about the fact that it's a sort of an exercise in futility, filing a complaint with the EPA's Civil Rights Office. What they did was team up with a local environmental group. They did file a civil lawsuit against the city, which, you know, got stuck in court, 10 years worth of litigation that ended in a ruling saying they were not entitled to personal injury damages. So that went nowhere. But they did team up with a local environmental group, and they sued under the Clean Water Act over those water pollution violations, those permit violations. And they ended up forcing the city to move some. The city has agreed to move some of the residents, only 41 households, and to create a buffer zone, a 300-foot buffer zone around this facility. Now, residents would say that doesn't take away the fact that our civil rights were violated because we've lost our community. We have had to move.
This is one of how many claims you investigated?
Almost 300, 265.
EPA's an explanation for all this?
The EPA did not deny our numbers. We spoke with the current Office of Civil Rights Director, Velveeta Golightly Howell. She did acknowledge problems processing the complaints, and she said, you know, we can't focus on the past. The past is over. There's nothing we can do about it, but we can focus on the present and the future, and we are.
Kristen Lombardi is senior reporter for the Center for Public Integrity. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Don.